A lot of times what I'll coach people as far as like fasting goes is like, hey, you know, if you start to get really hungry, if it's going on for 10, 15 minutes, because a lot of times it's like, you feel like, oh man, I'm hungry. And like 5 minutes later, you don't feel anything. But like, it's like, if you're like 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, I was like, lick some salt, see if that dissipates everything. And usually it does. But if it, like, if you're 30 minutes in, 40 minutes in, you're still like, man, I'm really freaking hungry. Then like, just eat, like break it, try again next time.
What's up? My name is CJ Finley, and this is the Thrive on Life podcast. I started a brand called Thrive on Life to help other mission-based people, brands, and businesses thrive. Each week, we interview people on topics of business, health, relationships, mindset, and much more to help us thrive in all areas of life. If the messages in this podcast resonate with you, but you're still feeling a little bit stuck in actually implementing these ideas, I'd love to help you on a more personalized level or connect you with somebody that can. So please reach out. Also, if you've got a friend who you know could benefit from hearing this episode, please share the love with them. My goal is always to spread positive impact through the sharing of knowledge, and I would be honored if you could help me achieve this goal. What is up, Thrive fam? CJ Finley here again with another episode of the Thrive on Life podcast. And today I'm talking with one of my best friends here in Austin, Texas, Mr. Baldo Garza. He is the co-founder of MSW Nutrition. We work closely on that and a few other things. And today we're just going to have conversations as friends. I'm looking forward to see where this is going because we haven't really talked about what we're actually going to talk about here today. Yeah. He's coming from a meeting and we're kind of going to do a conversation, co-working, and all the things that we love to do here in Austin, Texas. But before we get into it, how are you doing today, Baldo?
Doing pretty good, actually. I came from a little appointment, got some blood work done, and you know, starting off the morning pretty strong. So let's go.
Awesome. So let's actually start there. Blood work is something that both of us are really invested in, not just from the business front at MSW and with Neurostoza, but personally. When you're doing your blood work, what are you normally looking for?
Well, last year I was not as good as I would want to be as far as getting my regular checkups. And so right now the goal is to see like where I'm at just in general, like inflammation in general, what, like, you know, any type of markers, I mean, even my A1C, which it's never been bad. And I don't have any reason to think that it's going to be any different, but you know, I just want to check it. I've taken a couple trips, like family trips, even this past week when we had Easter at my parents, and like, I did not care about like my eating habits. I just ate all the things. So it's been the same thing this past whole month. And I'm like, I obviously don't think that 1 month of stuff is going to change what I've been doing for the past 2-3 years, but I still am curious, first of all. And then, but more than anything, I just want to get back in the habit again, because for whatever reason, whether it's because we're working or because, you know, I'll just say like, oh, I'll do it next month. And I just didn't get around to it. Like I did my blood work once last year, and usually I'd like to do them like every quarter or so, just to keep tabs on everything. But inflammation is, for me, is the thing that I'm looking for. Like, where is it going? Where is it coming from?
What is the specific marker for inflammation that you typically look at?
It's the, yeah. Now that you put me on the spot, I can't even think about it right now. It's, the one that I'm curious about right now that has a lot to do with hormones, inflammations that are hormones related is adiponectin, which you've probably heard Neurostoza talk about it here and there, but I don't know if I want to say that it's coming into like the forefront right now, but we're definitely hearing more about it. Say 4 or 5 years ago, anytime that we brought it up, it was like, oh, it doesn't really matter. It's just, it's a hormone marker, but you know, no one really knows about it. So don't worry too much about it. And we've always thought that it's very much tied to cellular health and obviously to hormone health, because it is a hormone. Now we're starting to hear more about how it's related to the regulation of your hormones. And so we're starting to dig more into it, and we'll see what happens there. I don't know. If you ask me if we do another podcast in a couple months, then I'll have better. Then I'll dig into what the numbers mean. And right now, like I said, I'm just trying to get back into the forefront of it. But homeostasis is the goal always.
Yeah. The making sure that
I think the most important thing is like doing it year over year, at least for people, just so that you can see the different levels. And really it's hard to describe unless you see changes in those levels and then really understanding the research behind why those levels are changing. So like adiponectin, for instance, if I just give you a random number, it's hard to tell it's for a specific person, like based on that one number, where you're at. Like if you're super low or super high, obviously that gives a baseline of what you need to be doing to either lower or raise it. But if you just get a number, it's really hard to understand where you're standing unless you do it multiple times over and over and over again. That's really what I love about blood work and health, is understanding year over year, where am I at? And how does, like you just mentioned, you went home for hanging out with your family and eating a bunch of stuff. What does that actually do to us in the short term, the long run? Like the only way to really check that is through your blood, because for some people, like you might be able to process food differently than other people. And you only know that if you're listening to this, if you actually go get your blood work done. Let's kick it now into like kind of...
Real quick, I'll say one more thing, because to your point about that, like numbers can differ. Like it also depends, like ranges can also differ depending on who's testing and like, and sure, like they'll usually be like milliliters per whatever. But what differs sometimes is like the test that comes back, what they say is in range or what's not in range. And then especially if they're color coded, sometimes with doctors will just be like, oh yeah, you're in the green. And in most cases, it's like, well, sure, but what's the actual number? And is that optimal? Because a color is one thing, but is it like barely in the green, or is it like a lot in the green? And what is that, if you were to take it with a different company, like what are their ranges? And then what does the doctor think is the right range for you? And do they know the ranges and whatnot? But like before, when I tried to do a little bit of veganism before, was because I had inflammation markers that were very related to me eating red meat. And so I wanted to lay off of that. So I tried some of the veganism, but the thing is that it wasn't helping my numbers. And so then I went back to meat at some point. I started with fish and they got better. The difference was that when I went back to doing, and I do a lot of meat now, is the quality of the meat. Like the fact that it was like not like grass fed, organic. I wasn't doing all this ground meat.
Well, if we're talking hormones here, like who knows what hormones were being added into the meat that you were eating that causes that fluctuation. And I think you bring up a great point with when you're doing tests and people ask me what tests that I take generally. One of the reasons that I've stuck to SpectraCell for certain markers year over year is because I started with SpectraCell years ago. And like, if I take a completely different test that shows me the same markers, I don't know if it's the same, like if it's going to be apples to oranges, even if it gives me the different ranges that are relatively similar. So I just make sure that if you're doing tests, like if you do one test, let's say we're in April right now, do a test now in April and do the same exact test 6 months from now. Don't go do a similar test somewhere else, because whether you want to believe it or not, like you can't for sure tell that it's going to be the same. It's the same test or the same markers and things like that. So one of the things that I've tried to do is year over year, I get the same tests and then I start adding in new tests that I'll kind of like get interested in. I think one of the areas that I've looked at in the past that I got kind of nerdy about was just like toxicity, metal toxicity that I've done. Here in Texas, our water is like really not good. Yeah. So I wanted to like check like metal toxicity. And what I did was I did a hair test, a urine test, and a blood test to like cross examine that. And then I did it like the same tests again to see after I like cut out certain types of drinking water, making sure that it was only from certain sources, and then being in different environments and improving my environments and seeing how that would come out. So it's been an interesting journey on my front with the blood work. But in terms of like your blood, and once you get certain markers, like what protocols are you usually doing to improve? So no matter what, like you're going to get certain scores back, and we're both really nerdy on supplementation. What is your daily like supplementation? And I don't even know this, and I'm a friend of yours. Like, what are you normally doing on a daily basis to supplement your blood, your nutrition, your like improvement of everything when you talk about optimization, right?
Yeah, right now I have a pretty extensive stack. I'm doing a couple of things. I'm also trying to improve my, you know, just to be honest, like improve my fertility. And so there's something that I've, there's a couple of things that I've added on that. But basically my foundation is always, or at least for a while now, has been where I'm taking like a liver supplement, which for us, it's the Liver Boost at MSW Nutrition, just because it's a very complete profile of nutrients for the liver and also detoxification agents. And then I'm taking the stem cell, the stem regen. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that. And then I'm also taking mitochondriac, which that's like mitochondrial rejuvenation. So those three are like my no bullshit. Like I'm doing at least those three. And then I'm taking, I usually take a joint supplement that there's this company called Synovix that makes, and I take, I climb a lot and I do a lot of, you know, what do you call it? Hiking. And so, and I'm talking about like hours. And so I do those as a stack because it helps with joint and ligament repair. And so I do some of that. And then the multivitamin, like a boost that we have is like all the B vitamins and a little bit of caffeine. And I actually laid off of coffee for, I think it's actually been a month now. So,
wow.
So it's a change for me, but it's been actually pretty neat. My wife, Jennifer, did the same thing, and she actually had a headache for like 8 days. And just from like withdrawals, basically caffeine withdrawal. She basically told me the other day, now I realize how much coffee is a drug.
Yeah. I haven't had coffee in years. Like as soon as I jumped out of the corporate world, I kind of cut it out, but I was drinking 3 cups a day when I was working at a corporate job, mainly because it was free. Like I would have the first cup before I even got to work. And then like when you had free coffee, it was just like, I'd have one, probably another one at like 10 a.m. and then after lunch when I was like tired. And then the first thing that I noticed was headaches and like, dude, I would get chills. Like,
nice. Yeah.
And I don't get chill unless I'm like really sick, like fever sick. I've never experienced that, but like that's when I was like, holy shit, I'm actually withdrawing from, yeah, from this thing. And I think one of the things though, it also goes back to your meat comment. I wasn't looking at the quality of the caffeine because, yeah, I still do a ton of caffeine today, like through various methods. And I don't feel like if I were to like go, because I've tested, I'll go, like, go on vacation. I don't have access to the caffeine sources that I normally am taking throughout the day. And I don't have a headache or anything like that, but I'm probably taking, I take like 200 to 300 milligrams of caffeine per day, but it's coming from like green tea or yerba mate, things of that nature. And then I'm also supplementing. I've realized that like when you complement it with L-theanine and B vitamins, yep, I don't know how your body is ingesting it differently than it would be in coffee. But I've noticed a huge difference for that. So for her, did she cut out coffee and then cut out caffeine entirely, or was it just the coffee?
Caffeine entirely. For her, that was pretty much the only source of caffeine for her.
Yeah.
She never even drank a lot. Like, so she would drink, like if I served her a cup, she wouldn't finish the cup. Most days she would not finish the cup, and she was very sensitive. So she would get like the jitters anyways. So it's not like she drank a lot, but she hasn't like not drank it like in 17 plus years. And so she felt the effects of that. It's just like, I need some of it. Obviously, like, and like any like medium amount is going to take her kind of overboard because she's just sensitive to caffeine. I'm the opposite. I can drink it all day and I can go to sleep like no problem. So like I never felt it was like a problem because it never affected me that way. And I still don't, you know? And so, I don't, if I go back to it, I don't know that I'm going to be too crazy about it. I know the other day I had a cup of decaf and I was like, I'm over it.
It reminds me, like now that you're bringing that up, it kind of reminds me of how like marijuana affects people differently.
Yeah.
Like caffeine is the same way. Like Erin, when she got pregnant, cut out all of caffeine and coffee, and she was way more calm and relaxed. And then when she gave birth to Aiden, the questions we were asking was like, damn, do you like start introducing this thing back into your life? Because like you were so calm and relaxed. And she would have like one cup here and there, and she noticed how sensitive she was to it. So I think that sensitivity also is dependent on, I wonder also, like, we're getting in the age of how male and female, it's improving for females in the healthcare space where they're actually taking data from female specific studies, because for so long it's just been male driven and dominated by males of like what you should do with your health, when the reality is like females, they're almost, you're a completely different human being, especially when you talk about hormones and like how caffeine affects hormones. And that's where I've even dialed into, like with my caffeine, the reason I take it is basically for sports performance. It's not even necessarily for like I wake up and I'm like, I need caffeine because I need this thing, or I'm addicted to the taste of coffee or whatever. It's really thinking like, oh, I've noticed that if I prime myself with caffeine in certain times of the day, like I actually perform better, I feel better, my mood's better. Now somebody could argue that like you could reach that state without it, but I honestly just enjoy it. Yeah. So I'm the type of person where it's like, as long as I'm not taking 500 plus milligrams a day and it's not affecting me in a negative way, it's something that I just like continue to roll with.
Yeah. So then I'm curious, because I've been away from the caffeine, if it has affected at all my adrenal numbers. Mm. But then again, I don't have recent ones. The last time I tested was probably also April of last year. So I don't know what they would have been. I mean, I was drinking a lot of coffee back then, so maybe I can see the difference, but I don't know if they changed within a year anyways on their own because of different factors. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. And then when I test again, like, should I drink coffee to see like how it affects me? But like, that's just not a... That's an experiment that we'd be kind of cool to do, but I don't know if it's worth it.
But you don't really want to do it. Again, if you enjoy drinking it, like, and it's not like a negative, like drinking alcohol every day would be, then go for it. Like that's kind of that's why I haven't really spoken on the caffeine front, because I mean, there's a lot of people, like I already cut out so much of my life when it comes to like, I don't smoke, I don't drink. And it's just like, there's gotta be some things where I just like drinking caffeine. I like that little boost, especially like MSW boost. So you cut that out for the month as well?
Yeah, actually I've been doing the caffeine free boost, but yeah, I'll probably go back to that one. That one has all the B vitamins and everything. So I think that it'll be fine. And it's only 95 milligrams. So I don't think it's going to be detrimental or anything like that. And
that is one. So that is the only product. So if you're listening to this, MSW boost, like I've been drinking this for probably like 4 years straight, like every single day. I travel with it. One of the reasons I like it is if, like, for instance, I have a speaking engagement in Alabama next week, and it's like a long ass day. I'm flying into Nashville the night before, and then the next morning I wake up and drive 2.5 hours to the speaking engagement, and the talk is at like 5:30 at night. Now what I can do with boost is like I can take boost at 5:30, 6. And it gives me a little bit of pep in my step, but then I can still sleep. Any other product though, I've taken like other energy drinks, or even when I drank coffee or espresso years ago, like I could not, I had to like the half-life of it would last into my sleep, like trying to go to bed. And I just like was wired trying to go to bed or anxious. Like that's what really, I think most people don't realize that how anxious they actually are until they cut it out. Like I didn't realize that a lot of my anxiety was really just being stemmed from drinking 3 cups of coffee per day.
Yeah.
Like no shit, CJ, now that I look back at myself. But I'd love to dig into, because this is a big topic for a lot of people. I think we're around in not just Austin, but all across the US is like fertility, and specifically in men and testosterone and fertility and how they all come together. And I think it's talked about from a couple standpoint a lot, but I don't hear a lot of men actually talking about it and what they're actually doing for it. It's kind of like a taboo thing. So I'd love to understand more about what your thought process is on improving that and what you're doing to go about it.
Man, there's so many things. I mean, sure, I got into exploring the things to do or not to do because of the couple situation, right? Because they're trying to get pregnant. And so the difference is that before that, the only way I ever thought about it was like, or, and I don't think this is correct, the only way I ever thought about it was like, well, if my, you know, if my testosterone's great, which mine is fantastic, then it's like my fertility should be fine. And then maybe that's true or not, but I don't think it's correlated 100%, right? So there's so many different things now that I can think about it. Like there's like, you're talking about motility and you're talking about like what is, I don't even know the terms on top of my head, but it's like basically like how fractured the DNA in your sperm is. And then there's like, obviously the amount of it. And then like, there's things about like, well, you've got to wait 48 hours in order to have like the maximum opportunity for fertility. So like, you know, coming every single day is not good for you, right? Like, it, well, or at least not for the specimen of like fertility situation, right? Because it's like, well, you didn't have enough time to like let the sperm grow into itself and all that. And then I'm just like, whoa, like that's insane, right? Because we've always thought about it as men, as I was like, well, just go and like try to like
do the
thing as much as possible. Like, I mean, they've even said about like, I've heard men, and not specifically in this space, but like it was like, to help your testosterone, like you should jack off every day, you know? And I'm just like, okay, that, I guess back in the day it was like, okay, that sounds great because you get to do the thing. And I guess it makes sense. If you're active, then you probably have more testosterone, but that's not the case, right? Like that's just like, I don't even know if that was theory or if that was just someone talking about like, yeah, well, I do this and I'm great. And then they speak.
Yeah.
About that.
That's the problem in the industry is like people, they use the N equals one as like for all, like they're an N equals one case. Like I do this, it works great for me. Now everybody should do it. And that is the tricky part with the fertility and how to go about it. Because then even if you're like maximized, like you have a partner and like vice versa. And then the one thing that I've really looked into in terms of fertility and like been advising certain friends on it, is just like stress. Just like, if you're stressed, even if you have good numbers, it could have a huge that could have a negative impact enough where it's like throwing you off. And I think that just doesn't get talked about enough. Like when you're talking about sleep, even if like you're thinking, what are you thinking about throughout the day? Like at your job, like, are you stressed? Like what is stressing you out in terms of your life? And then also the recovery aspect of it. A lot of the research I was saying, like it goes back and forth. I'm like, does sauna help your fertility or does it hurt it because you're in the heat and different things like that? Like, but I think most people get attached to these like crazy outlier things rather than just looking at, well, like, am I anxious throughout the day? What am I eating? What type of sleep am I getting? And then like crossing those boxes first, which I know you already do. So that you have to look more towards like the outlier stuff, but the average person and people that aren't digging into this yet, because you don't dig into it until it's that time, really. Like, yeah. Like especially as a man, you're just like, you never think about it until like it's too late and the thing's not functioning.
Correct. Like, well, like even like with caffeine stuff, right? Like, let's say they say that large amounts of caffeine can affect your fertility. Mm. And so a couple of thoughts on that, right? Like, so first of all, like if you're so stressed out about like not having your caffeine and you can't sleep and you're stressing out because like you can't function properly because whatever, like drink a cup. Like, I don't think it's going to affect that. Like the stress is not worth it, right? Like obviously you should be able to just go without caffeine and not be so stressed out about it. That's a different situation, right? But I think that like you can go into one extreme or the other. That's actually not the reason that I stopped drinking caffeine. I don't know why Jen was stopping drinking caffeine. So I was like, I'll do that with you. And so that's kind of why I did that, which I think is great. And usually when I do my like long-term fasts, I will also fast caffeine. So I've done 3-day fast caffeines before. And so maybe that also has helped the situation where like I wasn't like having withdrawals and I could just like step away from it. But then there's other situations where like if someone's trying to improve their fertility, for example, and one of the things they should improve on is like you should exercise more regularly, right? Because that's going to help with blood flow, and it's going to help with like, you know, one of the other thing that I don't even know what the motility is a term, infertility for specifically for men as well too, where it's like, how fast is your sperm swimming or not, or are they just kind of going in circles, right? And so I've done a test on myself now, and it's like they're kind of just like chilling, like they're not going anywhere, but they're, and then I was like, well, that's kind of like who I am. I'm just kind of just chill. So maybe like I need to like move a little bit more off, like in bigger periods. Cause you know that I'll go for like a 10-mile run, like no problem, but then I'll just kind of just chill the rest of the day. And so I was like, okay, well maybe I should improve that. And so what I've noticed is that because I've added exercise.
You need to become more ADHD. Yeah. You need to just be all over the place.
Yeah. Well, because I've added like small like sections of working out, like I also feel like more vitalized in general, like besides looking at like fertility numbers or not, right? Like, and so it's like, okay, so anything that you're going to do to help improve that, any aspect of your life, it's going to help all around anyway. So there's always a reason to optimize whether you're trying to like, you know, be fertile or not, right? Like there's just like, if you're absolutely not fertile, then there's probably a lot of things going on.
Yeah. It's all so intriguing to me because for Aaron and I, we like Aiden, we were doing the whole, we're not trying, but we are at the same time. It's like, we just don't care. So we weren't really like, I wasn't looking into it or anything like that. And then it's such a, like a random crapshoot. We were looking at another friend who was having to get procedures done. And then she was like the couple was in between like procedures and just randomly got pregnant. Yeah. So it's just like one of those things where, I mean, the universe knows best, or God, or whatever you believe in. And yeah, science can take us so far, but I'm a huge believer is in it. If you believe and you do the right things, like eventually something good is going to come of it. And that's where I think for you, it's interesting that you're going into looking at it like, okay, well maybe I need to just like change a little bit of my daily environment, change a little bit of how I'm showing up. And if I show up differently, like the result is going to be different. And that's such invaluable advice, regardless of whether you're talking about fertility, whether you're talking about getting a new job, whether you're talking about improving your health. It's just like the saying, nothing changes if nothing changes, comes to mind. And I think people are so resistant to change. Yeah. Specifically, like I'll think of a male that goes and gets a test and then realize maybe their motility is down and their fertility is down. I can see it being hard. It's like a knock to the ego of like, sure, damn. Yeah. And then like, but even worse, it means that they have to change. And that's such a hard thing for people in a moment that's so precious for their life to do. So I want to commend anybody else out there that is working towards becoming more fertile, more having more motility. Like, cause I don't know, we want to have more kids. Maybe it'll be me. I don't freaking know. Like, maybe I got lucky the first time, and I'm very like, open-minded to making sure that if that time comes, how do I have the right mindset about it? And that's where I'd love to shift into, like, you do a ton of meditation, a lot of mindset work. You were just mentioning the fast that you do. How is your mind played into kind of understanding this aspect of your life and then working to improve it?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on that. There's the, you know, speaking like in the sense of like speaking to the universe or, you know, or to God, the idea is that like for me, when I was first approaching, you know, fertility, I was like, well, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, kind of deal. And like, and I truly believe that. And at the same time, though, if there is a resistance to like, well, why don't you want to check this, or why don't you want to go do that? Sure, I could easily say like, well, no, it's because I just believe that like whatever needs to be, and so and that's fine. And I think as a couple, if you take that approach and you really are okay with that, then that's fine, right? Like, because maybe you will get pregnant, and maybe you won't. But the moment that like you do start to check, or like maybe there's a difference in the way that your partner looks at it or feels about it, and then you're like, all right, and you just start looking to it because like obviously this is important to us, then if I were to see like something that could help improve the whole situation and I would still have the attitude of, well, whatever happens, happens. I'm not going to change it because I just believe that whatever happens, like that's meant to be. Well, I think that there's a disconnect there, right? Because now you're telling the universe like, yes, I want to create something, but I'm not willing to like try different things. It's like, well, then the universe is like, well, like whatever. And so I think that a lot of the things might be like, even if you're doing the wrong things, but you're doing it with the intention of like, you're trying to improve the things. Like, let's say you have the wrong information about it, but your intention is like, oh, I heard that this stuff works for this and for that. I think that the intention is more than enough that the universe needs to know, like, hey, let me improve your percentages for health or or for fertility or for...
It reminds me of like going to the gym, like just most of the time, like just showing up, like in the beginning of your journey, if you're like trying to lose weight or get stronger or improve your life, like if you just show up every day and you do anything, like you're from where you started to a month in, like you're still going to be ahead.
Yeah.
Like no matter what you do. And that's such, that is an interesting way to look at something like this, because it's like, even if you don't necessarily have the 100% correct information, you giving a shit and trying and pushing the needle in a certain direction usually ends up in something good happening.
Correct. Yeah. And at least they're like, you're moving somewhere, right? Like, and if it's completely wrong, you'll find that out too, right? Like, oh no, that does not feel good. That does not like, I absolutely do not enjoy this. And because there's a difference between like not enjoying something because it's so different, but like, you know, that it's helpful, and something that like is not enjoyable and you're like, this does not feel good at all. And I don't want that. Then you would just stop doing that, right? Like nobody wants you to live a weird life that way, where like you're just doing things that you don't enjoy. And I don't think that you should either, but I think it's important that like, that you're communicating to the universe what you want. So like for me, when you talked about like the meditation, for me is like, it's always like trying to get into the into the mental state that like, this is what I want to create. This isn't anything, right? Like this is whether it be fertility or like income or, you know, goals of life goals or whatever. It's like, well, sure. Like I want to get to creating $50,000 a month business. And like, I don't know, I've never done that before. Do I have the skills for that? I probably not yet, but like, I can't just like hope that it happens. I'm going to try this. And like, if that doesn't work, I'm going to try this. And so I want to make sure that at least my intention and the way that I'm looking at it is also communicating to the universe is like, well, he's obviously trying. Like, this is actually what he wants. And so like, let me spark him here. Let me give him a little tip here. Let me a nudge here. Right. And so, and that's why things will happen whenever you make big jumps. We're like, oh shit, I don't even know where that came from, but these are all the things that I was trying. This is what worked. And then I can kind of teach on that. But at the end of the day, it's about like, do something in that direction, because it's like a sailboat, right? Like you're going to have to keep shifting the sail, and it's not going to be a straight path, but at least you're moving along.
Hell yeah. So we've been rocking for 32 minutes now. Baldo and I have some calls. This is the first time I'm actually going to try this little method of how to podcast. We're going to take an intermission here, take our calls, and we're going to jump back in. And I'd love to discuss two things on the back half of this podcast. One of them is fasting. I noticed the other day you were talking about doing like a 6-day fast, and I know you've done tons of fasts in the past. And I'd love to learn more about why you started doing that, the impacts it has, and how do you decide like the cadence of doing them, like every quarter, bi-yearly, whatever that looks like. And then finish off with like the business side of things and what you're working on. And you mentioned scaling to 50K a month. Like, how do you think about business and how does it integrate into your life? Because you're somebody I look up to in terms of being able to almost integrate your the things that you love to do into your business. And then also working with people that have the same missions and core values and finding that. And I think a lot of people could gain value from your take on those things. So we'll be back here in about an hour and a half and jump right back on the mics.
Oh yeah, let's do it.
Back from intermission, had a little bit of lunch. Baldo was able to get some work done, had two calls. It was awesome. But we're going to get right back into it with a conversation around fasting. So I'd love to know when was the first time that you really introduced fasting into your life and why?
Yeah. It's probably been about 8 years. I mean, the timeline's a little hazy for me, but I'll still tell you like the genesis and everything. I tore my meniscus doing yoga. Like, this is when I was practicing like solely yoga. Like, I was only doing yoga and I was trying like all the forms and like all the deepest bends and all that things. And at one point I was doing Lotus, you know, Lotus with the cross, the crisscross applesauce. But then like in Lotus, there's like a multitude of other poses that you can transition into while maintaining your Lotus positions. Well, that's not easy and you need a lot of flexibility. So I was trying shit that I shouldn't have been trying yet and it just snapped. And so, it looked like everything that I was, you know, from physical therapist, meeting with John, like all that, like you're going to have to get surgery. And I don't know why I started researching. I don't know what got into my head that I was like, well, I know people that have healed without surgery. Like, how can I do that? And so I just went down that rabbit hole for whatever reason. And it might have been partially because at that point I didn't have health insurance. I was like, that's going to be fucking expensive kind of deal. For some reason, the thing that kept popping up was fasting, but like long-term fasting. And because the idea was that whenever you're fasting after a certain amount of time, like you start getting into, like your cells and like you start getting into different modalities, like what are the words? Like, you could probably help me. I don't know why I'm blanking.
Ketosis is
like,
one.
Yeah, like ketosis, and then getting into different situations where like you're basically.
Autophagy.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So when you get into autophagy, right? And so this whole science of it is basically your cells obviously die off and then they come back again. But there's a nice little window when you've done a certain amount of fasting, usually around 36 hours plus, where you are not only like eating away at bad tissue, and so the your body's like very smart about like once it starts to eat away at yourself, which is what autophagy is, it starts to eat away at the bad tissues first. And then there's that nice little window where you're eating away at bad tissue and at the same time regenerating new cells, but they're regenerating right there where you're actually eating yourself at. So like and so some people say that, well, don't you lose a lot of muscle and all that? And so the idea is like, yes, you're going to lose muscle when you're not eating for that long period of time. But at the same time, the idea is that you're hopefully losing tissue, muscle, that you're from the areas that are completely damaged. It's almost like your body's like, well, we don't really need this because we can't really use this anyways. This is how I kind of like visualize it myself. Is your body just talking like, well, let's just start here because like we need something and like we're not using this, so this is horrible, so let's eat away at that.
Yeah.
You're still regenerating. And so I kept reading that it was between 5 to 10 days, and you know, at some point I came up with like I think 6 is my number, and so this was to avoid getting surgery and to hopefully regenerate my meniscus naturally. And so I talked to John about it, and he's like, you're kind of crazy. And I was like, look, I was reading this textbook, and like we're reading the science about it. And he were like, I mean, yeah, I guess it makes sense. Like, but I mean, at worst, you're still going to have to get surgery. So like, if you want to try it, I'll monitor you to make sure that you're not like just passing out. And so obviously I started doing the fasting. I think I ended up going 7 days at one time. And sure enough, like I was mostly resting. I was still going to work. I did stop all sorts of like physical activity because I mean I had to anyways because I had a pretty bad injury. Now when I fast, I still do some light workouts and some like medium workouts and like maybe I still go for a run, but like instead of going for like a, you know, 5 to 10 mile run, I'm doing like 3 to 5, a kind of like a slow pace just to maintain that pace. But that's really the genesis of how I got into fasting. And then I healed. Like I don't want to say that I was 100% better, but like it was enough to that when I went to go get an x-ray again, they were like, I think you're going to be fine without getting surgery. And so that to me was already a win. And so then I started reading different books. So Simlan is a great resource for fasting science. And I have three huge textbooks that he has written basically. And so at some point I decided to make it like, well, you know what? Like it also helps the gut and I'm going to introduce this like monthly and even seasonally. So now my cadence is that on a monthly basis, I'll do a 3-day fast just to reset the gut. Like I just finished one last night after like eating like crap this whole over the holiday kind of deal. Plus the weekend before we had gone to visit Jen's family. So I was like, I definitely need to do this. But normally what ends up happening is that every 6 months or so, basically when the seasons change, I'll do another 6-day to completely reset the gut. And basically I see it as preparing my gut for like the new seasons. And it's interesting because the last 6-day I did, which is at the beginning of last month, here in Texas, we're starting to feel like the spring weather. And I actually ended up doing it a little earlier than I thought it was, but I just felt this need because I started to feel like all the different sinuses from all the different allergens that are out in the air. So I was like, I should probably do it now. And so sure enough, like I had like a day or two of like just some allergy stuff, and then it kind of went away because I reset the gut. And so that's my cadence now. Like I do a 6-day every quarter or so, like basically when the seasons are changing. And then on a monthly basis, I just do a 3-day. But it's honestly just because I want to give my body time to like process everything that I do to it or don't do to it. And sometimes I cut it short. This last one, I did do a complete one. But the previous couple times, like I was shooting out for a 6-day. And like 4 days later, I'm like, I think I'm good. Like I just felt it. But like at some point, there was a time that like, no, it has to be 6 days. And it wasn't because like I couldn't handle it anymore that I stopped. It's just like felt right. And it just felt like, okay, I think I'm good. And yeah, that's kind of how it feels. I was telling Jen the other day that I've been craving mangoes and pineapples lately. And I was like, that's just because that's what's now coming into season, or like avocados are coming into season. And I had stopped eating avocados and I was like, I don't know why, I just don't like them anymore. And this was like in the winter. Well, they're not in season anymore. And then now it's like coming back, like I'm craving avocados again. So it's like being tuned with those type. I think your body tells you is it's that we're so fucking like everything's around us and
you can't even
marketing,
tell.
Like yeah, you can't even tell.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And I won't say that I can tell, but then when I make a comment like that, I was like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like I'm craving avocados again. And it was just a general comment within a conversation. And then I was like, oh, but that, I guess that makes sense because they're back in season.
Yeah, Aaron and I have been smashing dried mango. And yeah. I mean, a lot of people do, but I started realizing like we do a lot of running and endurance stuff. And what ends up happening is I'm like, oh my God, my body is craving this because it's viewing this as a really natural, good source to fuel for like running. Because I don't want to eat heavy meals before running. So what we've been doing is like literally eating like 2 pieces of dried mango before a run. Like, so I already ran today, but usually after a long day, I'll pick Aiden up, which I'm probably going to run again today anyway, but I'll pick him up and I'll have some dried mango before. So at least I have something. And then I just go out on my run. So it's interesting because now that I'm thinking about what you've just said, like that's what I think my body is telling me. Like, it's just like, I'm naturally craving this thing that it knows that it's good for it. And I think a lot of people have to, like, we don't purposely tune it out, but especially I used to live near downtown Austin. I like couldn't feel anything. There was just like the frequency of just living in a very chaotic, busy type of life. It's hard to feel in tune with those different things. But what does your refeed schedule look like when you're coming off of the fasting? And has that changed over the years? Like how you kind of handle, like when it's day 6, what do you do?
Yeah, I've tried everything. I've tried to like just like, fuck it, I'm just going to eat all the things. Because like, you're just craving things. Like this past fast that I did, I was for whatever, like, and by the way, I have not eaten donuts and any of that stuff in a long time. But for some reason, I was like, God damn, like I really want a donut. which like me saying that was just weird enough because it's like that's not something that I typically care for. Like, and so it was kind of that. And so this time around, I just broke my fast and I actually made myself a sandwich, just like I did like the keto bread. I don't know if you've seen the hero mm-hmm. bread. I did some of that with some like raw cheese, and which should help the gut. And then I did like just some turkey. And so I pounded that, I pounded two of those. Right. And then that was my refeed. And then I kind of just went back to normal, but like we cook quite a bit. And so I'm usually like eating like, you know, chicken. And so like, I won't do the heavier meat that's tougher on the gut, right away, but, but I'll do chicken. I think that's, at least I think of it as like, it's a soft protein because it's easy to break down. And I've done everything from like, okay, well, I got to go super light and just do like a soup or a bone broth, and like, and that's fine. I'm pretty sure that helps quite a bit, but it's not satisfying enough for me. So I don't do that. But definitely when I've done like, fuck it, I'm just doing all the tacos, everything, like you just feel like crap. Like, and it's just like your body's like, stop. And so, so I don't recommend that.
But that would be a good YouTube video. It's just like, get a bunch of people that are fasting and then be like, we're going to have an eat off after the fast and see who can actually like survive.
Well, did one with me. Nurse Dosa did one with me. I think it was like my second or my third fast. He's like, I'll do it with you. And then, so we did it. And by the way, labs, we do all the labs before and after and stuff like that. It's crazy. But, it was funny because doing the fast together, because at that point I was like living with him. This is when we were starting. So it has been about 8 years. And we would go to the grocery store, just like go down the aisles, all like the nasty stuff. I was like, oh, imagine eating this and like imagine eating that. And like we got five more days to go kind of deal. But we broke it and like we went to go eat barbacoa, and like I had a taco, but like no tortillas, nothing. I just had like a little bit of that shredded beef at that time, and I'm talking about a little bit with some egg, and he pounded like six like tacos. He's like, dude, I don't care, man. Like he was throwing up. For I don't know if he was throwing up, but he definitely felt like crap, and he was in the restroom for a while. Like even his wife was like, don't do it. And I was like, you shouldn't do that. And he was just like pounding them, and like, yeah, it was really funny. And I was like, we're definitely never gonna do that again.
But he definitely goes 0 to 100. I love
yeah
it.
He does.
And everything.
So I recommend, don't,
when you're
like, you can't, your body, your stomach can't handle it, first of all. Like it just can't, like, and so how it ends up handling that much food, because
getting it out,
it's because you get used to it. Yeah. Right, like you get used to just adding so much. But like, I mean, your stomach really is like the size of your fist. So like the idea that we eat like 20 tacos and or like, you know, 10 tacos, like that's just insane. Don't get me wrong, I do it too sometimes. Like it's like, it's not trying to judge anyone, but like, especially if you haven't eaten for 6-7 days, like there's no way you're going to fit that much food in there.
Yeah. When you're actually doing the fast, are you taking any electrolytes? Like what's your water intake look like? How does that work?
I do drink quite a bit of water. I'll probably drink about maybe half a gallon throughout the day of water, just regular water. And then salt. I'll lick just like table salt, like pink salt. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. So one of the things that I've learned over the years is that like electrolytes, hormones in general are obviously chemical signals, but part of the what's it called, part of like the actual molecule is electrolytes, salts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes when you're going through a fast, obviously you feel like I'm hungry, and what I've noticed is that so many times when like the times that I've, you know, I'll be fasting and I'll just like grab some like nuts because they're there, and it's like, oh, I'm not actually hungry. I'm just like used to just grabbing things and throwing them in my mouth kind of deal, like just like nuts or whatever. And so the difference is that because you're not eating anything, like the chemical construction of anything is not going to be complete. And so what that means is that sometimes your leptin and your ghrelin signals are mixed up because they have incomplete amount of, let's say, sodium or whatever, electrolytes. So the communication is not right. So because like you shouldn't do that to yourself, you know, kind of deal. But honestly, so many times, like I'll just lick some salt you know, 5 minutes later, I was like, I don't even, like, I forgot that I was hungry. And that just gives me a sign that, like, oh, like, I'm just not getting the right electrolytes for my body to communicate properly. And that's really all it was. And so that's that science part of it is things that I have learned through all these like textbooks and whatnot that I've read on the art of like fasting kind of deal. And they tend to be true. And at least for me, they have been because it works.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. As you're doing it, it's one of those things that it's like reading the books as you're doing it is helpful because you're feeling certain things and then you like attach what you're learning in the book to what you're actually feeling versus if like you were just to read about fasting, you can't really understand what's happening.
Yeah.
You have to like just do it and then make some mistakes. Like it sounds like everybody, I mean, you and everybody has made in the past, like a mistake I say lightly is because you can't really do it a wrong way, but it's just like for you, what does that look like and what are you trying to achieve? And then when you're doing the research of it, it's attaching different data that you find other people going through and scientific markers in terms of like you're talking leptin and ghrelin and how that feel, you can then link that back to, okay, the last time I did a fast, this is how I felt. And now I have something to attach the next time that I fast. I'm like, oh, this is exactly what's happening to me. You don't get to that point unless you do it. And the reason I'm even saying this is for people out there that are going through a fast, I think it's overwhelming to try to understand everything that Baldo was talking about on the first go around. So it's literally like, for me, the first time I experienced any of this is like, I had to have a colonoscopy. So it was like, in my mind, the worst type of fast, because then you're also like having to take this formula that makes you shit everything out. And it's like terrible. But after a day, I started noticing like, oh, like I don't really feel that hungry. This is interesting. And you never really understand that. And then as you're going through this and understanding like electrolytes and how the body goes through autophagy and these other things, like, oh, it starts to make sense. I think the longest I've done is like 30 plus hours. I need to do a 3 day or 4 day at some point. But I'd love to jump into what is up in the world of Baldo and what he's up to from a business standpoint. You've been working on a bunch of different cool projects lately. And one of the things I'd love to discuss is you kind of like helping people spin podcasts up and different things like that. And what's that looking like recently?
Yeah. So first of all, I really enjoy podcasting, right? And more than I enjoy hosting it, which I do enjoy hosting, I really enjoy the process of helping others do the same, right? Because I think that in the medical space, which is what I'm mostly in, wellness, you know, health space, I think that there's a lack of, I should say, like there's a lack of education that's fun in the health space. Meaning like, you know, it's either like you're going to hear from doctors and you're like, they're hear the same thing, or they get super sciencey, or sometimes they just don't get any education at all. They're just like, this is why you should do this, and this is not why you should do this, and like I know better than you kind of deal. And so for me, I think that because of the experience that we've had like with Nurse Doza or like the different people that we've helped, I mean, you know, the Hadi Health Network that you and I had at one point, and it was like we were helping mostly other health-related companies, and it was like, get the word out there because you're talking about things that do make sense and that is more relatable to like the current science than like what you've read in a textbook, which there's nothing wrong with that. But like at the same time is like, you should continue to, there's always new science coming out. So like you should continue to educate yourself in that and then, you know, teach everybody else. So the reason I like the podcasting is because someone can sit there and, you know, teach whatever they want to teach, or during an interview, ask about questions that are not like the normal. And then because of the way that, especially with AI tools, we can turn that into so many pieces of content so that we can still talk about the same message, but like in, you know, 100 different ways. And so it helps the business because they're getting the word out there, and it helps the consumer because they're getting, or it helps more consumers because there's more people now that are hearing a similar message now. I also don't want to say like, well, I know who's talking about the right things and who's not talking about the right things. that is really not my responsibility, I don't think, right? Because I think that anyone listening to anything, even if you're listening about fasting right now, like, don't just take my word for it. Like I said, like, I read this and I read that and I threw out a resource, and like, look those up and make a decision for yourself. Like, sure, listening to us is going to help you make a decision to go do the research. Or maybe you never even heard of fasting, for example, and you're like, well, now I got to search it. Well, like, please search it. Don't just like take my word for it. Like, know that it's worked for me, and it's worked for a lot of people that I've talked to, but go and research it. And I think that that's what's valuable about podcasting, is that you can do that in real time and people can ask those questions right away. So I've taken on this like niche, which I've kind of like branded myself saying legacy practice modernization. And so just to get a little businessy, is that right now we're in a very unique situation because baby boomers are about to, well, a lot of them are retiring, right? And a lot of baby boomers were practitioners. And then for me, what I have found is that there's a nice little group of people that like in their practices, they've been doing very well, enough to sustain themselves and their family, but it's not like a huge practice where they're not like, they're not trying to like franchise the practice. They're not like doing much of that. It, like, they're in a situation where like, I'm ready to retire. Maybe I'll sell my practice to someone else that can carry it around, and hopefully they do well with it. Maybe it's not a big enough practice where like they don't have like, you know, 50 employees that like they can just step away and it'll just continue to run. So these are people that are like in a practice that maybe are like, okay, well, I'm ready to retire, so I guess this is it. Like, I just need to find someone that can take over my patients, and that'll be good enough for me. And so those are the people that like, if I can help them understand that they still have a lot of value to add, right? They still have a lot of like, and the consumers have a lot to learn from them. That's who I'm excited about, because these are the people that like have clinical practice, right? I had a call earlier today and we had exactly this conversation. And it's just like, yeah, like, it's crazy because like there's this one guy and he's got like 2 million followers and he's talking about all this research and he's got 3 books on this subject, or I just don't want to call anyone out right now. 3 books on this subject and all that, and it's great and people follow him and he sells a shit ton, but he doesn't know what he's talking about because like it's all research. He doesn't have any clinical practice, as opposed to I've been practicing for 30 years, right? And like, I know what has actually worked and what actually hasn't worked. And so those are the things that I want to like teach people. So we've gotten into this, like, all right, well then like you should have a podcast, and like from that podcast we should have a newsletter from that, and we should have, you know, and all this knowledge and courses, and like, so that way people can come on to your page and be like, oh, sweet. Like, I can actually read all these articles that he's talking about, and like take one of the courses that he's talking about for like this, like $200 item. And then like, he said, like, I'm still down to like do, like maybe like a cohort or maybe even like one-on-one coaching sessions. But like, I no longer want that to be like my only business, right? Like, I don't want to like have to do calls every single day, every single week. And like, and so like, I want to like just step away from it. And like, yeah, he's like, I could sell my practice, but at the same time, like, I know there's more value to add. And so that's what we're doing. Like, we're taking like, I'm doing this for a couple other people, which is the same thing that we've done for Nurse Doza. The difference is that Nurse Doza right now has 8 solid years of clinical practice. And we're growing so much, and at least in your opinion too, like, he's kind of this genius, right? Like, Nurse Doza is. So it's like, we want to make sure that people are hearing his message, and then still make their own decisions. But that's what we want. We want to be able to make sure that people that have all this clinical practice, you know, Jenna Ashby is someone that we had at the festivals. She's someone that's similar that, we worked with in the past before. And she's fantastic. She's got 30 plus years of practice in acupuncture, and she teaches for a UCSF, and like, she's like this badass at like all that, and she's dealt with every realm of diseases and health related with the acupuncture, and she's like, you know, almost like ready to step away, but she's also has a lot of like, she's a lot of excitement within her. So she wants to do something different. She just doesn't want to be like in an office anymore because like she's done with that part of it, but she still knows that she has a lot of value to add. So like, so how do we make, you know, more offerings where people can still gain knowledge from her and wisdom without having to like go to an office?
The beauty of today's world is you can be in both modes at the same time. And I think that's what we've really helped Nurse Doza master is you have like clinicians who are just managing their practice every single day for a decade, two decades, but they have nobody like documenting all that stuff outside of like the normal documentation they're doing patient per patient. But in terms of like as a practice, as a practitioner, what they've learned, the education, nobody is helping them document that extra value or collect and organize that extra value. And that's where with Doza, we've been able to, as he is practicing, and the beauty of also like practicing and being an acupuncturist, like it's less about years and more about intensity of those years. Yeah. So the reason I'm saying this is anybody else out there, whether you're an entrepreneur, a podcaster, a clinician, don't put in your mind, like I need to do something for a certain amount of years to like check off I'm a master, an expert. Because like, for instance, this is going to be like I'm approaching 350 podcasts, right? Now you could do 10 podcasts for a year for 10 years. And you could say, oh, I have a podcast for 10 years. Or you could do 300 episodes in a year. And who's going to have more experience podcasting? It's going to be the person that did the 300 in that 1 year. So just so that you can like grasp that, it's just like what you're really helping people do is just maximizing their day. Because even if they want to maintain being a clinician, they can still extract value on top of that day. Like they can still do more. And that's where 10, 20, 30 years ago, you couldn't do that. Like you didn't have the access to the equipment that we have now. Like you didn't have first of all, like our phones nowadays, like I'm recording my YouTube videos on really, like that's how good they are. So anybody can really start doing this stuff. And that's where I wanted to ask you, like 20 years ago, what did you picture your life? Like, what did you picture you doing with your life? Did you ever think like, oh, like I really like podcast. I'm going to be somebody that really likes podcasts and this is what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah. It's funny because I forgot who else asked me that the other day. And I was like, I hadn't really thought about it. If I go back 20 years, I was selling Cutco knives at that point. And so it was all sales. And there was definitely a transition at some point where I was like, well, what is this leading to? But I don't think if I take today minus 20 years, I don't think I was in that mindset yet. And at that point, I was probably still in like, how do I sell more knives next year? Right. Because I want to like break this record or like beat this guy or like, I know that there is a good chunk of time where I was like, how do I sell more knives this week or this year, but like work only 6 months out of the year, you know? So it became this like, how do I sell more, but less time, more and less time. And it was definitely that thing. And now I'm about to say a couple of things, but before I say that, I'm going to say that like, I know plenty of Cutco sales reps that are like high performing, kill it. And they definitely use that money to then go do good in the world, right? Because they're like, they're killing it. And they have the same, that same drive that I used to have as far as like, how do I sell more in less time? They're thinking more of like, so that I have more time to go do good in other places kind of deal. I personally never liked working that way. Like I like my thing to be my, like, this is also my thing. Like I don't like, as opposed to like a means to an end.
You want the thing to do the feel good as well.
Yeah, like I want that to be my thing, right? And so so there was definitely when I started with Nurse Doza was because I was like, he was going through a transition. I was also going through a transition where I was already beginning and probably already pretty deep in the situations. Like, I don't want this to be my, like, this is not the thing that I want to do for other things. Like, I see this as like, I sell a lot of knives and next year I'll sell more knives and for whatever reason, like I'm just not a multitasker. So I can say, I'm going to do this so that I can do that. I was like, well, I can just do that. And so I don't know what it was, but it was like, I felt there was a need. John had already helped me through a couple health related situations for myself. and starting to understand how health worked and biochemistry and all that. So I knew that he was a genius in a sense of that. So I wanted to help him. So I figured, like, I'll do this so I can figure out, like, what exactly how I do want to help and what's going to be good for me. And so the thing about it is that I quickly understood that that was that whole world of health and, like, clinics and, like, health insurance and that whole world is, like, so messed up that I was like, oh, like, this is, I, there's so much opportunity here from the sense of, like, sure. And I've been everything from, like, oh, we can make a lot of money to, like, we can change the whole medical system. And so I've been, as far as, like, the, like I've been everywhere in between that spectrum of, like, this is a lot of money, or to, like, fuck, let's change everything. Like, we can change the whole world kind of deal. So, and like, I'm probably in between now, right? Like, there's definitely some way to change the world in a sense, but for me, it's just like, look, I can think about the big picture, and sure, like, I love to ideate that way. But at the same time, it's like, whenever I think about, like, how are we really going to change the system, or how, like, you're not going to change a system. Like, you got to either create a new system or just completely influence the people spending money, the consumer, to spend it a different way. And I find that that's why, like, now I feel like, okay, I'm in the zone that I need to be, because if I can, like, if you and I help Nurse Doza and he starts having, like, let's say, I don't know, 10 million followers, and we're selling, you know, whatever, revenue is like $100 million a year or whatever, which is like, that would be a massive success. But, like, that's still not, it doesn't do that much of a dent. Like, that one.
Yeah, when you really think about it, it's just like, in the scheme of the world, it's like the difference between the $1 million company and the $100 million is like, you still feel the same way when you go to sleep at night.
Yeah.
There's actually probably more problems than the $100 million company usually, yeah, than there is the $1 million company. So it's just like, I think that's just wisdom of entrepreneurship. You start learning and then figuring out what your superpower is.
Yeah. And then we've done our little version of, like, a media company, right? Where we're mainly servicing, like, health related companies. So I think there's a play there, right? Because, like, well, sure, I can help Nurse Doza, but, like, if I helped, like, 100 Nurse Dozas, now we're making a bigger dent in the whole world, right? Because now we're educating so many more people. And you might say, like, well, they probably have about the same followers. It's like, sure, but, like, the idea, like, that would be so nice that if it, like, instead of just helping 100 million people, we're helping, I don't know, 500 million people.
I mean, this all comes full circle, and we'll wrap here. It comes back to your mindset of the, how do I sell more knives in less time?
Yeah.
So what you're doing from a practical sense is you're taking the knowledge that you've learned helping MSW, and then the How Do You Health stuff. I was just talking the other day about how one of the people I'm working with now, she was sending me different events and retreats and different things that go on. And I was just like, I never told you this, but I helped run a health festival. And, like, it was pretty legitimate. And I was thinking about it the other day, and I was just like, well, all those things add up to the ability for you to sell more knives in less time. And today's day, what those knives look like is like, okay, you just said it. Like, how do I help more people that are like Nurse Doza? They already have a Rolodex and a book of business that they've been helping. And then those people can then, this is why I love the digital world, is like, you do it in less time because you can literally hop on a Zoom call, and in an hour, because of all the knowledge you picked up over 8 years, you can help that person so much in 1 hour, yeah, even if it's just like spinning up like a little landing page and then teaching them about how to make a newsletter and getting their podcast spun up. You're now exponentially, like, they can grow if they choose to. And that's what we've seen with Doza, is just like, it's an the beauty of all this is this exponential growth, because we're just operating out of the lounge. Like, one day we could wake up and he could have 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, but we're just doing the same thing, but exactly a little bit better every day. It's not like he has to service 5 million people, because that's impossible.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I think that you said it exactly correct. It's like, we're just, how do we serve more people with the less amount of time, and in a quality way, right? Because, like, yeah, you know, the way that I see it is that, like, it's really about the consumer. Like, that's Like, we don't, there's no system to be, needs to be changed. Like, the system will change itself if, you know, if for
if
some
reason.
If the
consumer starts making different habits, it has different habits and actions.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We don't have to worry about that. Like, what we have to worry about is that people know the right information and can make decisions for themselves. And you know, it's crazy that, like, sometimes I'll go into, like, even with my family this weekend, like, we brought, like, gluten-free bread and stuff like that because we were going to eat that stuff. And they're like, well, but you're not celiac. I was like, yeah, but it feels better to, like, not have to have that tingling because I eat the regular bread. Like, have you ever just tried that? And it's like, but, you know, my doctor never said anything. It's like, your doctor doesn't have to say anything, right? Like, you could just try it and see how you feel about it. And like, having those type of conversations, it's not because, I don't want to say, like, well, they don't know better kind of deal, because, like, it's not even a thing that they have to know better about or not. They just, it's not in their realm, right? And so it's like, we can just get, like, small conversations like this in their realm, people will then try things and decide for themselves what works or doesn't work. And that's, if anything, that's the biggest win for me, is, like, if people can just, you know, tune into what's good for them or not, then I think that that's what we can all hope for.
Yeah, and that stems from my biggest takeaway from this podcast, and I loved having you here today. Thank you for making the drive.
Of course.
We talked on such a variety of topics, and I think going back to the comment you just made of, like, well, my doctor didn't say this, I think everyone, and I check myself a lot on this, is, like, be careful, like, who you're listening to and how much you're listening to them, rather than saying, like, every day you wake up, there's something to learn, and you don't need permission to learn those things. And that's what I love about working with you and MSW and Nurse Doza, is just, like, when we're talking about health, we're constantly talking about, like, what's the latest, like, data point we've gotten, or what's the last experiment we've done. And the beauty of it is, it's not just from a health standpoint, it's from business, it's from relationships. It's like, we're constantly looking for breadcrumbs of just making better decisions for ourselves without judging other people's decisions on their own. And I think that's something, unfortunately, that, like, social media and the media world has done, is, like, almost forced people to think, like, they have to judge what other people are doing, rather than you just laid it out. It's like, instead of looking at the gluten-free bread in attaching to anything, it's like, I'm going to try these two different things, see which one suits me, and, like, then I'm going to roll with it. And maybe in the future it's something different. Maybe I'm baking my own bread.
Yeah.
And, like, who knows, right? So I think that's a huge takeaway here today, is really just, like, giving yourself permission to be curious and learn the different things that you want. And then when it comes to your health, not attaching to any which way. It's like, it's different for so many people. Any last words before we jump off?
No, any last words? I mean, for me, I think that, like, honestly, like, educate yourself. Like, our principles have always been, like, hey, help others grow and help them, and help other people, educate other people as well too, because, I mean, that's the only thing that really matters, is that, like, hey, make your own, just empower yourself, right? Like, instead of, like, having to rely on others to do it. And yes, like, there's a lot of information. Some of it's fake, some of it's good. Or I should say a lot of it's fake and a lot of it's good too. So it's just like, trust me, most of the time, like, you have time to try things out and see what works for you. And honestly, if it feels good, like, keep doing that, and you're on the right path.
The worst thing you could do is change again and keep pivoting and keep iterating and just enjoying the whole process. Best thing you could do for us is, if you like this conversation here with Baldo and you gain value from it, please share it with somebody else that you think would also gain value from the conversation. Give us that 5-star rating and review. And until next time, this is CJ Finley with the Thrive On Life podcast. Thrive on, y'all.
What's up, y'all? This is CJ again, and on behalf of the small team here at Thrive On Life, I'd like to thank you for listening to one of our episodes. Our mission in life is to help people like you fuel your passion and make every heartbeat count. And we realize the best way to do this is together as a team. So we'd love for you to join in on this mission and connect with like-minded individuals within our Thrive On Life community. To do so, please head to thriveonlife.com and connect with us there. We'd love to chat with you. Before I sign off, I'd like you to always remember one thing. When we strive together, we thrive together. So please do your part in helping others thrive on life.